Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Nolan Radio, the world of Nolan, audio-only version. Today we're going to be taking a look at independent film, and what I hope will be an ongoing series on independent film on Nolan Radio. This episode in particular, we will be looking at Icon Film Studios of St. Petersburg, namely the founders, Chris Woods and Simon Lynx. That's Lynx like the jungle cat, L-Y-N-X, not like website links. I've gotten to know Chris and Simon over the last 2 or 3 years from the filmmaking community, namely through the events that we have attended and where their films have been exhibited. And I've always come away very impressed by their talent, their aptitude for storytelling, their personalities, and their ambition, and their support of the Tampa Bay area filmmaking community. And I'd like to introduce them to you, and hopefully you can get to know them a little bit as I've come to know them. So coming up right now, the interview with Chris Woods and Simon Lynx of Icon Film Studios. On the phone with me right now are co-founders of Icon Film Studios of St. Petersburg, Chris Woods and Simon Lynx. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Nolan. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. Now, how long have you all been together?
Well, since for a long time. I mean, we've known each other since we were like 12 years old back in Utica, New York. We used to junior high and high school and college together, and we kind of started Icon really like making movies in 93, I believe.
So in grade school up in Utica, New York, you all started talking and discovered you had filmmaking in common, or what?
Actually, we were the two weirdos in the class that didn't get stuck in a group with anybody else.
I can identify with the weirdos part. I usually was in the outcast section myself. I can identify. And then when did you all start getting serious about actually making movies?
That was right, what, 95?
Yeah, like 94, 95, like we made like, you know, little movies here and there.
Okay, just for the audience, they don't know how old you are. So 94, 95, you would be in high school, out of high school?
It was community college.
You're in community college, so yeah. You were in like, you were about 20, 18, 19, 20 at that time.
Right. Yeah.
And did you do these movies for class assignments?
No.
Okay.
No, it was for personal amusement only.
Yeah.
And do those little experiments still exist?
In the vault.
Never to be seen again. Something else I can identify with.
Yeah. Yeah. Utica was a place where they didn't have any like film classes, or there wasn't any kind of clubs or groups. It's nothing like here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially back then, there wasn't convenient, digital cameras, mini DV. You know, cameras or desktop editing. It was just.
What did you have?
We had a VHS C.
VHS C, yeah.
And we can't.
Compact? VHS C?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The school used that.
Oh. None of the schools used that.
Okay, this wasn't for class. This is your personal camera.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, there was never any, like in high school, there was no AV classes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There was none of that. It was just like, okay.
Yeah, communication stuff was kind of scarce.
Yeah.
Okay, because I remember most schools used Super VHS.
Yeah, I used that in UT when I came here.
And you came to the University of Tampa about when?
95.
95, okay. And Simon, too?
I came in 97.
All right. And now, I remember from talking to you before that this is where you had your first foray into their AV department and therefore into public access, or am I moving too fast there?
Actually, we never were really in public access. That was kind of like
it was like an on-campus local access.
Mm-hmm. There was a channel there. It was a closed circuit, in UT. They had a station there, and I helped out, helped get it started. And I had a show, a series called Creeping Death, and it was like, you know, like a Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone kind of thing. And, you know, I just started, you know, it was like, okay, we're going to do a TV station. You know, anyone wants to come up with any shows? I came up with that one. And I you know, put together a few episodes. Did that with the, you know, with the equipment there. And, did, you know, some of, you know, most of them were outside. They weren't really projects. You know,
how many, well, before we go into that, how many episodes of Creeping Death were there?
It was about 10?
9 or 10, I'll say, yeah.
Oh, basically one season, as you call it?
Maybe a season and a half, yeah. I'll say.
Okay. And then what did you do after that?
Well, it was after that, after, like, Creeping Death kind of just, like, it was just, like, lost its luster, and I stopped doing it, and I kind of focused on Chameleon, which was the first, actually, we call
tell
it.
Tell the truth, we got kicked off the air.
And then we got, no, well.
All right, now we have to know.
Yeah.
Why did you get kicked off the air?
We almost got kicked off the air, but then we didn't, but then the show, you know, the show's kind of, you know, we kind of didn't really come up with ideas. We wanted to do bigger and better things. So Chameleon was actual project. It was my senior project, mm-hmm. Which all like senior students could do if they wanted to. And it was a funner thing because it was like you're kind of saying, hey, I want to make a movie. You're doing, you know, you're not stuck in a classroom. You're just out there actually making a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Chameleon, and it actually when I finished it, it won the grand prize of all communication students could get at UT.
Which was?
It was called the Protovin Award. And it was like,
say that again?
Protovin.
It was Protovin, that sounds like an estrogen tablet.
like estrogen.
It was named after a teacher there.
Oops. I'm sorry. No, it's a perfectly respectable name. I'm sorry. Mr. Protovin or Mrs. Protovin, if you're out there, I apologize.
Yeah, actually, he's not alive anymore.
No, he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, but I never knew him.
Doesn't the award look like him or something?
Yes, the award is the replica of him.
Now, before we get too far past the Creeping Death, just to mark the occasion for our audience, because it will come up again, I believe, from our previous talk, isn't that where you created the character of Vic Van Viper?
Not really.
It was back in New York.
Yeah, well...
Oh, that goes back to New York days.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, sort of. I mean, the seeds were sown for Vic Viper back in Utica, New York in 1994 when I created the Red Freak character.
Ah, okay.
Who was called Vinny LaRusso.
Well, of course he was.
And then, and, you know, he was, and then Red Freak, you know, because his whole thing was he died and he became this kind of reaper person that, you know, showed people death, and he was the host of the Creeping Death show.
Now, I'm pointing this out to the audience because it's from the seeds of the Vic Van Viper, or more specifically, the Red, what was it?
The Red Freak.
The Red Freak series that your award-winning film Bleed came from. Which was much later than Chameleon, which we'll get to, but I wanted to establish a time for the audience so they don't get too lost. But that's an important development there, your UT days there.
Yeah.
So now Chameleon came out or was finished, what, about 97?
98. Yeah.
Okay, now at that point, what were you doing? Were you still in school? Or?
It was my last semester in college on my way to graduation.
Which you graduated summa cum laude, and
all the honors and everything.
With people banging down the door to get to you, right? Or no?
Yeah,
sheepishly got your diploma from the back of the window, from the back window. And
yeah,
rode off.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those. I won an award on a movie, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm gonna make it and stuff, and you know, just got a job at you know, the Education Channel in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
After that, and I just was a mass control operator for 3 years there or so.
At where?
At the Education Channel. Which
ah,
is right
okay.
On Willow and Cass. I'm kind of doing a plug there. I don't know why.
That's fine. Now on Simon, did you have anything to do with the Red Freak series?
Yeah, I was involved as far as helping him put them together.
So basically, you both did those head to head pretty much, and Chameleon as well.
No, Chris, that was mostly his baby, Chameleon.
Okay.
I helped out after he shot everything. I was like more like a creative consultant, helping him put it together afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I had a
I admire your restraint in not naming this person.
No, she'll remain nameless.
Because this would be, yes, quite the opportunity to expose the world the heinous witch who ruined your life at that time. But he's even now, he's covering it up. That's a, so anyway, okay, so after Chameleon, it's now 1998, 1999, and you're working at the Education Channel. And yeah. Simon, where are you at this point?
Chris is in Tampa, and I'm in St. Petersburg. And I'm working your regular blue-collar jobs,
mm-hmm.
and trying to get some money together to eventually move out of my hole-in-the-wall apartment.
Mm-hmm.
We're just, at that point, throwing ideas together to do something in the future.
All right, and then that which was, what was the next project?
Yeah, that was, which would be Bleed.
That is Bleed, yeah.
Yeah. Because there was a big hiatus where between, you know, the spring of 98 up until the probably the winter of 2001 where...
You were moving.
Yeah.
And I was in the process of moving. And there was just so much going on, we didn't actually have time to put something good together.
And
but,
I just mainly, like, in the hours of working in mass control, really doing nothing, I just sat with my notebook and just wrote ideas and wrote scripts, and, you know, and
I bet a lot of great first movies have come from that, just sitting around bored at work with a notepad. And
I wanted to make some kind of feature, and I bought a computer, I bought a, you know, G4 Mac, and I got Final Cut, and I got a camera. I'm like, okay, now I'm set. You know, and I talked to Simon about it, and like, okay, let's now make something.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was we didn't really have time to. We wanted to make a feature.
Kind of cheated.
Yeah, because
shot half a movie.
Yeah, because and also to go back to this, to go back to Chameleon. Chameleon at one time got picked up by a distributor, by a small distributor.
Oh, that's terrific! Now, what was Chameleon shot on?
Beta SP.
Oh, awesome! All right.
And, you know, which was the
well. How did you get a hold of Beta SP?
Oh, that was the school's camera.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
as much free equipment as you can get.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Exploit it while you can. So the distributor, go ahead.
So I went to a weekend of horrors in Orlando back in 2000, and there was this company called Department 13 there, and I had copies of Chameleon, and I was like, they had a booth, and I was like, hey, you guys make movies? Like, yeah, well, you know, I kind of make movies too, and I showed them Chameleon, and then like a couple days later, they called me up and said, yeah, we want to distribute it, and they put it on video, and it was actually officially on video. It was just on the website. But then, you know, then that kind of, you got us to be like, okay, let's make another movie. And because a lot of people would say that they reviewed Chameleon, and they'd say, we really like it, but if it was feature length, it would be better.
Right. So how long was it?
It was only like 40 minutes.
40 minutes.
Okay.
And, but
that was a confidence booster, though.
Yeah.
It was someone other than just your average Joe fan who actually liked the movie,
mm-hmm.
who was interested in either helping us out or being involved. So it kind of made our ego swell a little, made us think, you know, we're actually pretty good. So
you make it sound like that's all false. This is all a cover-up.
Yeah,
until people learn the truth. But no, you are talented guys, and you deserve that kind of recognition. And it just goes to show how early that recognition came for you. So what happened with Chameleon?
Well, the distributor kind of it wasn't really making any money off of Chameleon, and
or anything else.
Yeah, and they actually let me out of the contract, and
okay.
So, which was good because now the movie's back in with Icon, and you know, because I had a 7-year deal with them.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to sell the movie on our own
for 7 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then, wow.
But then when they got out of it, then all of a sudden that was null. So
yeah.
Well, good. All right. Now, but you never did get to make it feature length. I guess you said what you had to say with the 40 minutes or whatever. But anyway, it's back in your possession.
Yeah.
And people can get it from you.
Maybe in the future there'll be a big Hollywood version of Chameleon movie.
So, but it was from that you bridged to Bleed next?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, now when did Bleed start filming?
Really, January 2001, I'll say.
Okay.
And with B-roll and stuff. Because we kind of came up with the idea was, because I was watching a lot of documentaries.
That's when, Eat Your Hollywood Story and that kind of stuff boomed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Behind the Music on VH1 and just a lot of, also a lot of HBO, like Paradise Lost, the story about the West Memphis 3, and then there was a couple other documentaries on HBO, and we were just thinking, well, you know, it would be cool if there was a fictional movie, like a fictional horror movie or any kind of movie, but that was done like a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's fictional, but it's done just like a documentary with interviews and reenactments and stills and whatever, narration, too. And so that's how Bleed came about.
And it starred the lovely and talented...
Oh, Amanda Beck?
Amanda Beck. That was a dramatic pause.
And Liana Morrison and then also Dave Alsbach.
And Amanda Beck is going to be starring in your new movie, Pop.
Yeah.
I believe she's just a lovely girl and a lot of talent. She really Bleed centers a lot around her and the Red Freak character who was, I guess, lifted to become the Van Viper, who, ladies and gentlemen, was played by Chris Woods.
Surprise.
Yeah.
And I remarked
my only starring role ever.
But it was quite an impact. The makeup and you looked quite a bit different back then.
Yeah.
Real long hair. And I remarked when I first met Chris that it was funny because of the camera angles and the drama of the movie. I expected someone much taller and much heavier and much more menacing than Chris is in real life, which I guess is a testament to your filmmaking and acting ability.
Kind of like the legend of William Wallace. Said he's 7 feet tall and he shoots fireballs from his ass.
As history will show, Bleed, I don't know if you call it premiered, but it was exhibited at Renegade Film Festival 1, the first one?
Yeah, that was the official premiere.
That was the official premiere. And I believe it won Best Horror Movie of the festival.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you both on that.
Thank you.
What was the camera used on that? A little tech talk here for all the tech heads out there. What was the equipment?
It was a digital 8 camera, the same camera that we use right now.
Okay.
The same type of camera.
Okay, yeah, that's a good image you get with that. I'm a big Digital 8 fan myself. How did you edit that?
Final Cut Pro.
Okay, so you, by that point you had moved to Macintosh and Apple Final Cut.
Yes.
How were you doing it before that?
Actually, that was the first computer I owned was a Mac.
Okay, and it had it on there. Okay.
Yeah, and at UT I also worked on the Mac as well. You worked on the Media 100.
Media 100.
So it's always been Mac based. Always all our stuff.
That the old flatbed.
Yeah, the flatbed. We in our film stuff. Flatbed and deck to deck.
Recorder. Did you ever work with film?
Yes.
So you were serious about the flatbed?
Yes.
What
our movie Shadow of Victim is shot film.
16mm?
Yes.
Yeah.
Was that at school, or is that in the last few years?
That was in school. That was a school project.
How did you like that? Did you like working with film?
Yes. Yeah, I did very much. You know, to me...
The lighting was fun. Exploring a different kind of lighting. For me.
And seeing, obviously, on the big screen, all the big glorious colors and the big sound and all that. But it's kind of expensive. And the explosion of the video and computer revolution is why so many young people can get into movies, can afford to make movies, because when it was just film, it was much harder. Now, there would be those who would argue that would actually help weed out the lessers from the graders. I'm not so sure about that. The last 10 years especially, there's been an increasing ratio of digital to film in most of the big independent film festivals, right up to and including Sundance, to where about 1999 and 2001, 2002, it was actually more than half of the entrants were shot on digital video, and some were output to film, but a lot of them just stayed on video, and now I would dare say it's almost predominantly video. Wouldn't you agree that is a boon to filmmakers, or would you say that just creates a market for more junk because it's so cheap?
I don't know.
You can go first. I'll get mine.
Okay. I think it's a market for more junk. But, you know, because...
You're old school, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind working in video because, yes, it is cheaper. You know, you don't have to spend about developing and you know, buying the film. But I like the look of film. It is much harder, so you need a full staff crew when you're working with film. You need to have a DP that knows what he's doing. You need to have a sound guy that knows what he's doing. You need a lighting crew. You need lots of stuff with film, but the product does look better in film. In a way, it's good that, you know, video is helping because people are, you know, if the talent that is out there has a cheap way to show their image, show their vision to people.
Simon?
Like we were doing.
Well, it's just proof that if, even though you don't have a lot of money, you can still make a good movie.
Because
there's a lot of movies out there that they spend millions of dollars on and they're just junk.
Well, that's really well represented on both sides of the fence there, because what Chris was saying sounded like you use video if you have to. That everybody would gravitate toward film if they could, if it was equal to video. Do either of you all agree or lend any weight to the possibility that some filmmakers may prefer the look of video? Or is it just something we've become accustomed to because we have to?
I don't know. Some might, if they're looking for some kind of home video grittiness, reality thing to it, they might shoot something on Panasonic 24P, or they might, you know, or any kind of mini DV digital camera. It depends. And also, since, you know, everything is kind of shot in video, like reality shows and like all these independent movies, so people are kind of getting used to that look.
But funnily, to support your earlier assessment, it almost makes me laugh when I pick up a new video magazine and on the cover is a new film look program. So we're trying to cover the best of both worlds with the cheapness and accessibility of video, but we still want it to look like film.
Yeah.
And the closer we can get it to look like film, the better. And some cameras are made to go 24p and with tricky shutter speeds and all that to imitate film, showing that basically really we're going after a film look even with video. The reality shows are going after a different kind of brain section, I think. That wouldn't really work on film. The immediacy of it, almost kind of a newsreel look, makes it look more gritty, like the show Cops works like that, almost like an extension of a news drama. And it goes right into reality. But like I think you all are old enough to remember in the 70s, they tried to make TV movies of the week in video because of the cheapness of it and the improvement in resolution over earlier decades, and it just never caught on. Many sitcoms are filmed in video, many sitcoms are filmed in film.
Yeah.
And many sitcoms are filmed in HD to make look like film, which is all another.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, thanks for indulging me on the tech talk there. It's just kind of a side thing because it does impact independent filmmakers all over about their choice of equipment, the choice of camera, and what their peer group is doing. And you all are certainly prolific with your films. Make good films, make them often. And it's good that for a couple of guys like you, that video and computer editing is available. If it wasn't, we wouldn't have access to your talent.
No,
so there's a lot of junk out there, but I don't mind that because I think eventually audiences and film festivals will separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah,
you'll see it, and the crap will get tossed aside, and the good stuff will survive.
Yeah, because there is a lot of stuff where, like, I think one of our friends was saying they should be licensed to make a movie.
Yeah.
Like, you should pass a test, take a test like a driver's test or any kind of...
Well, at the risk of starting some, open an old sore on the PCR, one of the biggest hot topics that I got in bad trouble for was, I thought, how do I put this briefly and politically correct, that film festivals need to define the role of director. You remember the controversy I went through with that?
Oh, yes, the...
yeah, well, we don't have to name the name.
Okay.
I got enough trouble with that.
Okay.
But there were too many guys who, in my opinion, were slapping their names on a film as a director when they actually didn't do anything. And there were other guys who worked like hell to survey and control every frame. And they put their names on director as director, and deservedly so. What was frustrating is the thought that somebody who really didn't do anything may win a prize. Now, the controversy was that, so what? If the film won a prize and the guy nodding his head or shaking his head was responsible for the decisions, then he's the director. Now, I know that works that way in Hollywood largely, but on an independent filmmaker level, what do you think about that?
You know, well, yeah. If you're a guy that sits in a chair and just says yes, no, and, you know,
doesn't really show too much involvement, though.
Yeah.
Well,
making decisions, but you're like not down in, like, let's say, the trenches.
Yeah.
Dirty. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
My test, and this is what reminded me when you said that about it should be a test. My test for anybody who says he's a director, and not everybody's going to agree with me about this. If I give you a camera. Any camera. Let's say a VHS camera. They don't even make them anymore. It's a VHC, I think they make them. And a couple of blank tapes. And send you out in the world. Can you make a movie by yourself? If you can make a movie by yourself with a camera, with one camera, maybe throw in a couple of decks for deck-to-deck editing, you know, but by yourself, then you're a director, and I don't care what you do after that. But if you've never gone through that, I don't see how you can call yourself a director. But that's just my opinion.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with
if
that.
If you don't know how it all works, it's kind of like, why are you there?
Yeah, now, producer, yeah. Okay, the money man, he can stand around and nod and shake his head and whatever, but the director, to me, has to be a little bit more hands-on. Okay, well, thank you, gentlemen, for indulging me a second time. okay, now, we are from Bleed, the award-winning Bleed, and then now the third Renegade Film Festival, I believe, now that was, help me on the dates here, was that December of 2002 or 2003? I think 2002.
When we played To Live and Die Out, I think it was that four. Yeah, that was four. I remember Filthy was the third. It was the major big.
Yeah, that was the big, that and Web of Darkness, Snicker. It was the Renegade 3. But I saw you guys at Renegade 2. Did you have a film at Renegade 2?
Yeah, we played Remembrance.
Okay. No, and that was one I couldn't stay and see. How did that, tell me about Remembrance.
I'll Simon elaborate.
Remembrance was kind of
Remembrance, Simon.
Okay, let me remember. Remembrance was almost like a alternate ending to Bleed. It's a short film by itself, but it kind of takes off kind of where Bleed ends, where you have the main character from Bleed. She's in it. And the character that I actually play in Bleed is also in it. And it's like I say, it's an alternate ending just because the ending in Bleed is more of like your, I don't want to say common, but it's like your regular justice type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end of Remembrance, it's kind of more like a street justice thing or more of the justice that your everyday person would rather see, because a lot of people don't have faith in, like, the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
They figure, you know, they got ins and outs and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And in this film, it's a different type of ending. It's still a final type ending. Mm-hmm. It's just an alternate type thing.
All right. Now, after Remembrance, you went on to quite a few more films that seemed like you produced pretty quickly.
I think after that we did. We started working on To Live to Die.
Yeah. Long-time readers of Nolan's Pop Culture Review will remember my first cheesy online video from Renegade 3, where two of the guys I interviewed outside the State Theater at about 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah,
was Chris and Simon, and that was one of my favorite spots. It miraculously had decent sound to it, and I believe you talked about To Live Is to Die right there. That was what was that, May? I think it was May.
Yeah, May of 2003, and that was like 2 months before we started shooting. And we shot that in July of 2003 and kind of finished it up like around November and then showed it in December.
Was that at the coffee house? That had, I believe, the very first coffee house meeting started in December. I want to say of 2003. I wasn't at that because I didn't know about it yet.
Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, so the first place to live, the debut of To Live to Die was at Saints and Sinners, the last Saints
Four,
and
right?
Four, yeah. And then eventually did play at the coffee house a couple times too.
Okay, and the last Renegade Film Festival, Saints and Sinners. Sponsored by Renegade, was December of 2003.
Yeah.
And I was there and met Steve, Uncle Creepy Barton of Fangoria Message Board, and a lot of colorful characters, and that's where I also, on an unrelated topic, got in trouble about the director thing. Now, the next month, January 2004, was the first coffee house meeting that I attended.
Yeah, that was
the Guzzo brothers, Paul and Pete, deserve a lot of credit for starting that, two productions, and Walter and Sarah Romeo for letting everybody use the 1515 coffee house in Ybor City, 1515 7th Avenue, I should say, Romeo Studio Coffee House for filmmakers' exploits, and I'm happy to have been at just about all of them. I missed two in the wintertime. I've been to all the rest of them. You had quite a few films there. Tell us about them.
We had To Live to Die.
Mm-hmm.
We also showed some old movies like Shadow of a Victim and Honey, I'm Home. And we showed Chameleon, which got a different, it was open to a newer audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I remember, sir.
I think we played that, Bleed, eventually. And then, we had a new movie out in 2004 in Broken Tomorrow.
That's right. That's what I was trying to remember. It was Broken Tomorrow. It was the last one I saw. They're all excellent. Fairly short subjects, except for Bleed, which is nearly feature length. Chameleon was 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And now your newest movie, Sever. I saw the sneak preview, as it was called, at the Romeo Coffee House last month, January 2005. The official premiere is this Thursday.
Yes.
Which I don't have the calendar in front of me. What's the date on that?
February 10th.
Thursday, February 10th, 2005. Sever by Chris and Simon of Icon Film Studios, not to be confused with Icon Studios, which is Mel Gibson, his passionate crowd. We'll premiere officially. Now, there was if I understood one of the emails right, you did a little noodling with the editing or the 3D effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really spectacular. The special effects man, I can't even hope to pronounce his name. I want to say Jorge Jimenez.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Oh, miracle, I got that
very
right.
Good. Yeah,
thank you. And he did some special visual effects, including some 3D graphics that are just really spectacular. And I think it stars Jeremy Badger.
Yes.
And go ahead and tell us about Sever, or whatever you can tell.
Oh, shoot, go ahead. Okay, well, basically, it's basically just a movie about, there's a man, he's trapped in one world, and it's in black and white, and it's kind of silent. It's almost like you don't know if he's like a prisoner or patient or whatever, because he's stuck in one room and somebody constantly watches him, and he listens to this voice that kind of tells him what to do or asks him how he is every day. And he always has these dreams of visions of another world and a girl
that's better than where he is.
Yeah. And what happens is he's given a present, which is a box, and in the box it's almost like a crystal ball.
Do we know who gave him the present?
No.
Okay. No. Okay.
It just appeared.
Part of the mystery.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in the box he sees the woman of his dreams, and in that world it's in color and there's sound, and it's like a much, like Simon said, it's a much better world than where he is.
The dream girl, played by the lovely and talented Natalie Reagan.
Yes.
Who is a dream in real life. She is a cutie patootie. Absolutely met her a couple times. The Halloween Horror Picture Show into the coffee house. Say hello to Natalie. Hello, Natalie. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And, what happens is he eventually escapes, and he's in this brand new world, and it overwhelms him because he's never been outside. He's never seen cars or other people or heard noise and see trees and leaves and all this kind of stuff. So, and he eventually tries to find his dream girl. in this world. So, and I don't want to give away the ending. So, all
right. And whether he's successful or not, and what happens after that, you'll just have to come down to the coffee house and check it out this Thursday, February. I'm sorry, one more time,
February 10th.
February 10th. At 1515 7th Avenue, just a few doors down from the Masquerade in Ybor City, the Romeo Coffee House. And we're looking forward to seeing you guys there. Now, another big deal coming up at the end of the month is MegaCon. And I believe you all have a table with Mr. Zandy Lalina, Rick Danford, Jason LaCoury. You guys,
Greg Rivera,
the elusive and mysterious Greg Rivera. How could I forget Greg?
And actually, Debbie Ronchin is I think, or Roshan or whatever.
Yeah, Jason called her, pronounced it Roshan. Yeah, Roshan. Debbie Roshan, Scream Queen, absolutely. Andy Lalina told me, that you all got a pretty good booth there, right? Smack in the middle of the hall.
Yeah,
pretty high visibility. Andy Lalina, the director of Filthy, of great repute. Andy was on Nolan Radio a few months ago talking about Screamfest. And we'll get Andy on probably maybe even close to MegaCon. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But so what are you all going to be selling your films at MegaCon?
Yes.
All right.
We currently have DVDs in production.
Yeah.
Of all of them?
Pretty much.
All right,
be like a pack of like there's gonna be like one DVD will have Lead on it and it'll contain like To Live, To Die, Remember Is Broken Tomorrow, and another DVD will have Chameleon having Sever, Honey I'm Home, and Shadow of a Victim on there.
Okay, now MegaCon is in Orlando, Florida. It is at the Orange County Civic Center.
Yeah.
Center, a huge building, one of the hugest buildings I have ever seen in my life. It is gigantic. That whole complex is enormous. MegaCon is always a hoot. It always is very exciting. A lot of celebrities there. I believe the website for anybody who wants to check out the MegaCon is www.megaconvention.com. And to learn more about Chris and Simon and Icon Film Studios, go to www.iconfilmstudios.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
If anyone can't make it down to MegaCon but wants to buy one of your movies, what do they do?
Well, pretty soon we're going to have them on our website.
Okay, and we will hopefully our website.
And actually, that's right.
I still have yet to lobby on that, I guess.
That's right. It'll be on the Crazed Fanboy.
I'd love to have it on the Outpost. I'd be very honored to have it there. If you want to, I'd be happy to do that.
Because we're gonna fix up some stuff on the DVD, which we didn't have time to do for MegaCon. So.
Yeah, have like commentary tracks and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Behind the scenes commentary and all that?
We have all kinds of extras.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. In our closing couple of minutes, is there anything else you want to talk about we haven't covered?
I don't know. We can talk about anything in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. What's coming up?
Working on the pop script.
Now I ran that trailer. That is really attractive looking. I ran the trailer on Crazed Fanboy for Pop. About the subversive murdering of a pop princess by a lookalike. Yeah. And I just thought that was amazing. Great music. What is the status on that?
Well, right now, did the first draft. Filmed two scenes. The two scenes are completed and edited. The goal now is writing the second draft. We actually have another Icon member helping us with that, Luis Montos.
Okay.
And he's actually a good friend of ours, and he used to go to UT.
He actually helped with Creepin' Death.
Yeah, Chameleon.
He appeared in a bunch of movies.
And lived to tell the story.
Yeah, he plays the bum in Chameleon, and he was also assistant director in Chameleon.
And the bum. Where's the assistant director? Is that bum over there? And Pop, I'll just remind everyone who might have missed or forgot about the first part of the program, also stars Amanda Beck.
Yeah. And also Tiffany Ritchie and a bunch of other cast of characters. Just tweaking the script and sending it out to hopefully studios. You know, hopefully we'll have some kind of premiere of the two scenes sometime in the future, maybe.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Probably later in the year, I'll say.
definitely looking forward to that. Do you like having control of your product to sell it yourself? Did the one episode with the distributor kind of turn you off? Or if someone came up with a million dollar deal,
they didn't seem to really push it very much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were a small operation, so you really didn't expect huge things. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of disappointing. They didn't really get it out there.
So for now, just go to www.iconfilmstudios.com to learn more about Chris and Simon's shenanigan. Right?
That's right.
Yes. All right, you guys. Hey, thanks for being on Nolan Radio.
No problem. Thank you.
Chris Woods and Simon Links, everyone. And we'll be looking for you at the coffee house this Thursday and then later on at the end of the month, February 25, 26, 27.
Yes.
That weekend at MegaCon in Orlando. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Chris Woods and Simon Links of Icon Film Studios of St. Petersburg, Florida. I'd like to thank both of them for appearing on Nolan Radio, and thank you all out there in Webland for tuning in and listening to the program. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope to see you all again very soon as the production on Nolan Radio is picking up a little steam and moving forward. Lots of exciting things happening for us in 2005. Stay tuned. This is Nolan. See you soon.